Good evening, all you bodhisattvas. Thank you for being here, for gathering to create this field of breath and hearts, bodies and minds, where we are connected in so many more ways than we know, and create a field of encouragement for aligning with the way. Mostly this evening, I'd like to read you a poem by Maya Angelou. But I'm going to say some things, and then come to that last. So her voice will be what you take with you in your ears. In our precept study, we've been touching in with the first bodhisattva vow. I vow not to kill. And so, as it often happens, everything seems to be about killing, and I vow not to kill. Refraining from killing, preventing killing, killing to prevent killing, grieving the killing, etc. My high school student read To Kill a Mockingbird, and it was there, you know, this mystery of humanness, in which we both save and destroy each other. And seeing this play out is the awakening story of a girl. That's sort of a core of To Kill a Mockingbird. What people think they're doing and what they actually do in responding to each other and their stories they come with are two quite different things, both for better and for worse. You know, when people think they're separate and they're most connected, and people think they're being connected and they're separating, you know. And I read Pullman's new novel, Dust, twice recently. It really got me. And that's also a coming-of-age tale in which an 11-year-old boy and a 16-year-old girl confront the mysteries of killing and loving while riding a huge, inexplicable flood towards the ocean. Feels like such a beautiful image, sort of wild, uncontrolled flood with a whole lot of human and otherworldly interactions along the way. And even This American Life, I don't know who heard it this weekend, but it chimed in with an episode you might want to hear, I think. I recommend it. But part of it, one of the acts, is a woman who writes a long letter to an unknown man who sold her sister that last fatal dose of drugs. And it goes on. I just read Ta-Nehisi Coates' wonderful memoir of growing up, you know, in Baltimore, with a father who was determined that his boys would not only survive but become men in the middle of everything that was going on in that realm of trying to survive, where survival was the main thing. And I watched Moana another tale of bringing death and bringing life, yeah, and of sort of defeat and courage and connection. Really, so it just for, I don't know what it is in your life, but for me it's just like all like right here. And I noticed that, that it doesn't seem accidental to me, you know, although it was unconscious that, you know, that I was choosing all of these experiences, stories and poetry and song, they so much seem to have the power to bypass the limitations of my figuring out mind, my scarcity-driven mind, and they just fly right under the radar into the much more fertile, open, huge territory where we know at the cellular level, you know, if not the atomic level, what we don't know otherwise, where the seeming dualities are not contradictions, but they're the very warp and weft of the fabric of this life. And the beauty soothes me. The beauty of these stories and the beauty of the humanness of both being utterly connected and utterly clumsily bumbling along with each other through life. It comforts me, these stories. And it feels like the completely impersonal gift that my heart receives as a very personal blessing. You know, there's nothing, it's completely impersonal finding the stories and the seeing these sometimes harsh and sometimes tender realities, but my heart receives them as a gift for me, you know. A hug, a kiss, a tender look, you know, it's very personal. So a quote that we've been working with in the precepts group says, a fully engaged heart is the antibody for the infection of violence. What's that? A fully engaged heart. A fully engaged heart is the antibody for the infection of violence. So where do you find that fully engaged heart? Is this just one more imperative, one more thing you should try? You know, do you feel it hit you as, oh my God, there's one more thing I don't have? I don't think so, though. I don't think that's what that is at all. A fully engaged heart. What if that's just the heart you have already? So let's take, for example, one of our koans. One time, this one's very familiar to some of you, not so much to others, I guess. One time when Dongshan was washing his bowls down by the river, he saw two crows fighting over a frog. Someone asked, why does it come to that? Dongshan replied, it's only for your benefit, honored one. Why does it come to that? It's only for your benefit, honored one. So meeting this story today, having this come up as I was musing on our vow to kill in the fully engaged heart. I noticed something I hadn't noticed before. I noticed that if I'm stuck in my small story, if I'm caught in the tunnel vision of scarcity, then all I can see is the awfulness, right? All I can see is tragedy. All I can see is, must it come to this? Why must it come to this, you know? There's a kind of, can you feel the kind of focusedness of that? Like you're sort of completely, that compelling sight, kind of the horribleness of it in some sense, just makes this tunnel in which your focus, you can be, have a kind of narrow focus. And once somehow there's this urge to protect yourself from it, you know, why? You know, what is this? There's a kind of pushing it away there. And but I notice I can hold it in a different way. I can invoke my vow, you know, my fundamental, that thing that just rises in us, that is natural to us, that we're made of, that connectedness. I can feel the connectedness in it, the connectedness of us. And which is the root of our vow to awaken in order to all awaken together, in order to relieve all of our suffering. Yeah, that, oh, this suffering. How can I help? Yeah, that thing that just rises up. And I can consciously do what we know how to do. I can open my heart. I can feel it, right? It's a thing you can kind of feel. I can open my heart. I can breathe. I can notice my breathing in. I can notice my breathing out. I can take refuge there. I can find my seat. That phrase that's been coming up lately of where someone said to her teacher, what do you do when the emotions overwhelm you? When you have these strong, strong emotions. And he said, I know how to find the seat of my mind. We can do that. We know how to find the seat of our mind. And we know how to feel the openness of heart that's there, breathing in and breathing out. And when I do that, suddenly I notice the river. You know, I notice the rest of the sea. I notice the river. I notice Dongshan washing his bowl. Beloved, I feel the washing of that bowl. I notice my heart connected to the poignancy of this life and death. Life and death and life and death. Already connected. And I notice that I'm connected to my teacher who is saying, it's for you, honored one. This is your life. This is our life. It's for you. And it feels like a gift from him. A loving, a kind of blessing. Yeah? Who's saying, be blessed by this. Can you let the cries of the world enlighten you? Can you let them enlarge your capacity to be here, to be here and again here and again here with everything that it is. This very life of yours. This very you of yours, just as you are. That blessing. Which doesn't mean we're not heartbroken, right? But we're heartbroken open. We don't have to be heart shutting down. It feels very much more tender to me. And so this brings us to the poem that I want to read, the Maya Angelou poem. And in particular, this phrase of it. When we release our fingers from fists of hostility and allow the pure air to cool our palms, when we release our fingers from fists of hostility and allow the pure air to cool our palms, so I'm gonna read this poem kind of slowly, because there's a lot of it. It's called A Brave and Startling Truth. We, this people, on a small and lonely planet, traveling through casual space, past aloof stars, across the way of indifferent suns, to a destination where all signs tell us it is possible and imperative that we learn a brave and startling truth. And when we come to it, to the day of peacemaking, when we release our fingers from fists of hostility and allow the pure air to cool our palms, when we come to it, when the curtain falls on the minstrel show of hate and faces sooted with scorn are scrubbed clean, when battlefields and Colosseum no longer rake our unique and particular sons and daughters up with the bruised and bloody grass, to lie in identical plots in foreign soil. When the rapacious storming of the churches, the screaming racket in the temples have ceased, when the pennants are waving gaily, when the banners of the world tremble stoutly in the good, clean breeze, when we come to it, when we let the rifles fall from our shoulders and children dress their dolls in flags of truce, when landmines of death have been removed and the aged can walk into evenings of peace, when religious ritual is not perfumed by the incense of burning flesh and childhood dreams are not kicked awake by nightmares of abuse, when we come to it, then we will confess that not the pyramids, with their stones set in mysterious perfection, nor the gardens of Babylon, hanging as eternal beauty in our collective memory, not the Grand Canyon, kindled into delicious color by western sunsets, nor the Danube, flowing its blue soul into Europe, not the sacred peak of Mount Fuji, stretching to the rising sun, neither Father Amazon nor Mother Mississippi, who, without favor, nurture all creatures in the depths and on the shores. These are not the only wonders of the world. When we come to it, we, this people, on this minuscule and kithless globe, who reach daily for the bomb, the blade, and the dagger, yet who petition in the dark for tokens of peace. We, this people on this mote of matter, in whose mouths abide cantankerous words which challenge our very existence, yet out of those same mouths come songs of such exquisite sweetness that the heart falters in its labor and the body is quieted into awe. We, this people, on this small and drifting planet, whose hands can strike with such abandon that in a twinkling life is sapped from the living, yet those same hands can touch with such healing, irresistible tenderness, that the haughty neck is happy to bow, and the proud back is glad to bend. Out of such chaos, of such contradiction, we learn that we are neither devils nor divines. When we come to it, we, this people, on this wayward, floating body, created on this earth, of this earth, have the power to fashion for this earth a climate where every man and every woman can live freely, without sanctimonious piety, without crippling fear. When we come to it, we must confess that we are the possible. We are the miraculous, the true wonder of this world. That is when, and only when, we come to it.